Greetings. Welcome to episode 16 of Working Title Podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Paul Kane. Cozy Mysteries and Crayon Bullets, I speak with Heather Widener, author of the Delaney Fitzgerald Mysteries. We discuss tips on author branding, press kits, and the importance of reader reviews. Enjoy! How did you get your interest in being in private investigators, which is the subject of your books?
Right. I have no experience as a private investigator. I've met several and interviewed them, which was very nice of them to share their time and their interest. I'm a CK, which is a cop's kid. Mm-hmm. My dad was a police officer in Virginia Beach for 46 years, so I thought everybody talked about murder and mayhem and death and kidnapping at the dinner table. I was in my 20s probably before I realized that that wasn't everybody's dinner conversation.
Did you know other children who were children of cops as you were growing up? Because you said CK, that was like a term that sounded like it was common term, like CK.
Right. They sort of say like preacher's kid, cop's kid.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I did have other friends. Most of my close friends were not. And so it was always kind of cool to come to my house because there were handcuffs and guns and scopes, infrared scopes and you know, different. There were neat toys.
Was he a detective?
He was. Oh, over the years, he was head of the SWAT team. The Virginia Beach has horses and boats and ATVs and they had three precincts at the time. I think they have four now. So he did just about everything over 46 years.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Do you have any stories that you recall? Any mysteries that he had trouble solving or exciting cases? Or?
He didn't really talk about live cases, you know, while he was investigating. Years later, he would talk about funny stories. Kids would always ask him, how many people have you shot? And his answer was always, I haven't, but I've delivered two babies, because he got there before the police did. Mm-hmm. When I was really, really small, this was way before they had paintball and specialized bullets and rubber bullets and things. Mm-hmm. He melted my crayons down. So I spent a weekend with him melting crayons down, making bullets. So, you know, there's always a skill.
Learn a new skill. That's fascinating. Burnt Sienna bullets.
Yeah, exactly. I contributed to the SWAT team in, you know, the 1970s. They got my crayons.
That's funny. And so so you've never been a private yourself. How did you get into writing mysteries?
I've loved mysteries ever since Scooby-Doo and Nancy Drew and, you know, cartoons of the 70s and 80s. And that turned into harder core mysteries like Agatha Christie and Alfred Hitchcock and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and then it just expanded from that. I mean, I've always loved mysteries. I have 2 degrees in American literature, so I love to read, and I love all kinds of nonfiction, fiction, but I always tend to go back to mysteries.
Who are some authors, past or present, that you admire?
There's so many. It just depends on who I'm reading recently. I mean, I love Janet Ivanovich and Donna Andrews because they're very funny. I loved Lee Child. I love the whole Reacher series. I read John Grisham and David Baldacci, everything that they always put out. But yeah, there's so many that I have to write them down now so I can go back. I love Reese Bowen. She writes a series with the royal family.
Oh, wow. That sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. And what about your book? What's your latest book about?
My latest is the second in my Delaney Fitzgerald series. It's called The Tulip Shirt Murders. And she's the sassy private investigator set here in Richmond, Virginia, and she gets into way more trouble than I do. But the story starts out of music producer asks her to do some research. He thinks some of his music is being bootlegged, and that turns into a bigger bootlegging operation. And then there's a character from the first book, which is Secret Lives and Private Eyes, and his name is Chaz Wellington Smith III, and he's a strip club owner, and he's kind of sleazy, and he has bad table manners, but he always pays in cash, so he grows on you after a while. And he's back in book 2. There's a murder that he's involved with, not that he participated in, but he's familiar with the situation, and he hires Delaney and her partner, Duncan, who's a computer guru, which is a euphemism for hacker. So he does some hacking for her. And he has an English bulldog named Margaret, who's a sidekick.
Did you interview any private investigators for Delaney?
I did. I'm part of Sisters in Crime, which is an international group that supports female mystery writers and males. We have misters as well. And we brought it. We always bring in law enforcement to talk to our writers. And we had a female private investigator, and she was talking about some of the things and the projects that she works on. And a lot of them are missing person cases and undercover kind of things.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I'm sorry. I was getting ready to write the series at the time, and I was trying to find a job that my character could have that gave her freedom, mm-hmm. that she could get out and do some investigation, and she wasn't stuck behind a desk or didn't have 40 or 60 hour work weeks she had to complete. And so after talking to the private investigator, it's like, well, that's good. She would have some law enforcement experience, but she really isn't law enforcement. So my book's kind of teeter on the edge of cozy. They're funny and they're light, but she does have some law enforcement. So true cozy readers would consider her a private investigator, but it's still in that tradition.
And what is cozy mystery to you? What does that mean?
Cozy to me? I always think of the Agatha Christie's and the Murder, She Wrote. There were both cozy was going on in the same time period in America versus Britain. It got its start in Britain, and it's usually a rural setting, a small setting where there's a group that's known to the reader. There's 5, 8, or 10 characters. There's not a huge number. There's some crime that goes on. There's nothing gruesome. There's nothing overt. There's not a lot of language in it.
Mm-hmm.
Anything bad happens off camera. You mm-hmm. hear about it. You talk about it, but it's not really... You don't witness it like you would in a thriller. And readers typically like to learn something from cozy, so they've evolved over the years. They're knitting cozies and cat cozies and cooking and crafting. So a lot of times you'll get some kind of skill with it too, which is neat.
That is neat. I'd like to read some of the cooking ones because then I'll have something
to enjoy. I know, a lot
of
the recipes.
Oh, that's neat. Okay. Well, I appreciate the clarification. Because I don't consider myself a big reader of mystery novels, so I'm still learning all the, I guess, you know, segments of that genre.
And the genre's blurred over the years. There used mm-hmm. to be just traditional and cozy and thriller, hard-boiled, soft-boiled. Now there's romantic suspense, and you can have any kind of, like, a lawyer mystery or mm-hmm. a medical mystery, or there's the genres have blurred over the years, the subgenres.
I remember Coma. I think, was that Robin Cook?
Cook.
I try to remember the name. I remember, I guess that would be a mystery, like a medical mystery.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago already.
Yeah. And technology has changed so much too. So as you're writing, if you're going to do present day, you have to be careful if the book is going to come out in 1 or 2 years in the future that you're not talking about flip phones or fax machines or things like that.
Yes, yes. And you mentioned Sisters in Crime. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I've had prior guests who also are members, I believe, like Maggie King and Mary Burton.
Uh-huh. Mary's our current president. It's an international organization that supports female mystery writers, but we also do have members, male members as well. They're called misters. It's all over the country. There are lots of opportunities with training and discounts to different types of classes. There's a lot of online forums for book marketing or writing or craft or design. And then there are local chapters throughout the region. We have 3 here in Virginia, 1 in Tidewater. Ours is Central Virginia. We have about 42 members. And then we have 1 in Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C. area. And so it's nice that we have 3 that are in close proximity because we actually do partner with each other. We've put out 2 anthologies with the Tidewater group. And that gives our members a chance to be published and to learn about the book publishing industry.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So they're very supportive, and it helped me get my start with publishing.
Well, wonderful. I'm glad you get that support. So are they also in your critique group, some of these members, like when you're drafting this novel or the next novel, do you meet with them to go over?
I do. We have a local we're on hiatus right now. It was kind of the summer and the fall, and we were getting people a chance to write some more so that we had plenty to review. But it's all mysteries because it was Sisters in Crime. And that was very helpful to get different perspectives. And not just someone, a husband or a wife or a mother saying, oh, it's wonderful. They really dig into it. Did you mean to have her eat lunch twice in that chapter? And, you know, she went in and she was wearing a dress. And when she left, she was wearing pants. And, you know, little details that sometimes you miss on the first go around.
And what's your process for, let's say, for your first Delaney book? You know, did you have the mystery in mind from the get-go? Did it come to you as you're writing it? Like, and how did the character come about and the setting?
So I like to think that I'm a plotter. Mm-hmm. There's two types of what they categorize. They call them plotters or pantsers. Plotters are the spreadsheet, kind of outline it, go into detail, organize the whole book. You know where it's going from beginning to end. And I like to do that so I have the story and I know where I can put clues in. And I use my little highlighter and I write, okay, there's romance in this chapter and there's humor in this chapter, and I go through the whole bit. Then I start writing, and the characters kind of take off in their own fashion. So then I become a pantser, which is right by the seat of your pants.
Right.
So I like to think I'm a hybrid. I do start out with what I think it's going to be, but the chapters have moved around. Like in Secret Lives and Private Eyes, chapter one was actually chapter 7 or 8 for a while, and then it ended up being chapter one. And when you do that, you have to be careful to make sure that you don't remove clues or things like that.
Oh, yeah. I never considered that. I guess when you're writing a mystery, you have to be, you know, other genres, it might be easier to shuffle the chapters around. But just as you said, when you are in a mystery, you got to make sure the clues still are in the proper order.
Exactly. And it does make a difference. Or if an editor takes them out, sometimes you have to explain to them, no, that's important earlier on. That gives you a clue to something else.
Yeah. And how long does it take for you to write a first draft?
I'm usually pretty fast with the first draft, but then it takes me so long to revise and rewrite. It took probably 2 years for the first one and about a year and a half for the second one.
Oh, okay.
So I admire these folks that can crank out 3 and 4 books and a novella in a year.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing to me, too. I'd like to be able to write that fast.
I work too. So I still work. So I work in IT. I'm a quality assurance and governance manager. Mm-hmm. So it's two different worlds. It's one that's kind of IT and left brained, and then the creative side when I come home and write.
I was just curious. You brought that up. Were you ever nervous about revealing to your coworkers that you're writing a novel or you have a novel out now and what their reaction might be? Or were you just like so excited you couldn't wait to tell them?
Oh, most of them knew anyway because I write at lunch. I mean, because my schedule is so tight, I get up at 5 o'clock and I do all my social media in the morning and then I write at lunch. And then I try to do some kind of book promotion in the evening and writing. Mm-hmm. And so they saw me at lunch. What are you writing? What are you doing? Where is it? And they've been very, very supportive, which is nice. Okay. And then we always joke. I mean, if they keep up and they're misbehaving, it's like, keep it up. They're going to find you in the next book in a horrible place.
Very nice. Better behave.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned how Sisters in Crime helps you with publicity or marketing of your book. But I don't know if this includes yourself, but writers, this includes me. For sure, is, you know, we tend to be introverted, shy. We don't like public speaking or, you know, being loud. Is that an issue with you? And if so, how do you overcome it?
Every time I take the Myers-Briggs exam or to kind of tell about your personality, it comes out different. When I was younger, I was introverted. Now I'm showing more on the extroverted side, but it's close to the axis. So people do tire me out after a while. I've had enough, and you know, especially like a conference of going 12 or 14 hours for 3 or 4 days, then I need some downtime. It's sort of a, I don't mind speaking. I mean, I've taught for years and I've done training, so that just seems to roll right with it.
Oh, okay.
And people always ask. They find out anyway, or that, tell me about the Sisters in Crime thing, or I heard you write. What do you write? Or somebody said that you know how to kill people. And I was like, only in books, only in books.
Yeah, let's clarify that.
That's right. I said, if I came across a body, I would be running and dialing for the police. Just like there's, I'm not going to poke around.
The bullet must have come from this direction.
Oh, no, yeah. No, nope, that's my sassy PI. I get to live through her. She is the adventuresome sort and gets herself in and out of trouble.
Is Delaney, do you consider her an alter ego to yourself?
A little bit. And then I think she's also my homage to Nancy Drew. I think of her as a grown-up Nancy Drew.
Mm-hmm. That's very nice.
And she was just amazing because back when she was written in the 30s and the 40s, there were girl books and girls did things and boys did other things. And Nancy had a car and she could solve mysteries and she had young friends and she could solve the mysteries before the police could. And she just had this adventuresome spirit. So, and she's been a role model to so many people. So I kind of like to think of her in that kind of continuing the tradition.
Well, that's very nice. And what about Duncan, correct?
Duncan, that's her sidekick.
Mm-hmm. Does that come from your IT work because he's a hacker?
A little bit. Yeah, some of the guys will help me out with things. I'll have questions about, oh, can this really happen? No, that can't happen. Don't try that or yeah. Don't explain. And then you run into even with the murder part, you mm-hmm. want to make it realistic, but you don't want anybody doing a copycat or using it as a, you know, recipe to figure
sure.
out something.
Sure.
So I try to keep it at a level it's plausible.
But mm-hmm.
Not a how-to.
Right. No, yeah, please. Please, no. And how do the ideas of the mystery come to you? Is it from headlines? You read in the paper or a website and that's where you get the idea or somewhere else?
Sometimes I keep a little notebook with me because mm-hmm. you never know. Sometimes you pick up dialogue. Somebody will say a word that's interesting or they'll give you an idea or you'll hear something on TV. So I'm always jotting down things. One of my first short stories that was published, there was a suitcase that washed up on the beach that had a grizzled up hand and a gun, and it wasn't a human hand. And there was a real story back in the 80s where someone was killed in New Jersey and they dismembered them and put them in suitcases and threw them over on a boat. And I thought, well, wouldn't that be interesting if something besides the normal seashells washed up on the beach? And what would happen? So that's the real story gave me the idea for my story, but it was totally fiction. I made up the location and the pieces and whatever was in the suitcase.
And you live in Richmond, and the story is set in Richmond. What do you do for research, you know, where you have her live and work and the mystery unfold? How do you, set the setting to make it vivid for people who aren't familiar with Richmond, for example?
Well, I think Richmond is wonderful. We've lived here for 26 years. I grew up in Virginia Beach, and then we moved here. And I just love the history, the music, the culture, the restaurants. So I'm out and about a lot. So when I see neat places, I like to make sure that I incorporate them. There's a section at the end of both of my books for people that don't live in Richmond or have never been here. I want them to know that these things are real, like the Folk Festival or Maimon or Monument Avenue, and so that they can look them up if they're really interested in. I didn't know a lot about Amelia. We'd visited a couple of times, but I used Amelia Courthouse in the first book, and so I had to go down there one weekend and just kind of drive around and get a sense of what the place was like, what kinds of buildings were there. Google Maps is a great tool for authors. If you don't live in the city, you can use Google Maps, you can use the street view, you can use the aerial view, and it gives you an idea of, oh, I need a body of water near this interstate. Where should I put this murder scene?
And you were, if I am correct, you were at the Festival of the Written Word in Chesterfield, right?
I was, and that was wonderful. I was there with a lot of my Sisters in Crime folks, and I'm also in James River Writers with you.
Oh, yeah.
And some other folks, so that it was a lot of different Richmond authors and local authors.
And you enjoyed the experience. How did that come about, and how do you find venues for speaking and promoting yourself?
Some find me, and then I find others. This one found me about 3 years ago, Chesterfield County. Each library did a special project or a special promotional event, and the librarians called and said, hey, would you be interested in participating in this? And that helps with a lot of times they'll call me for Sisters in Crime saying, I need mystery authors. Can you recommend some in the local area? And as part of that, which was the same the same projects with the county, they do Murder at the Library, and we've written the script for that event for 3 years in a row now. They do a murder mystery event where they charge tickets, and there's an act, a play, and then the audience gets to solve the mystery at the end.
Oh, neat. It's like those dinner mysteries.
Yeah, exactly. And so we'll be doing one for them in February next year, so we're really excited about that.
Oh, that's cool. I'll check it out.
So sometimes they find us. Sometimes they find us through the organizations. Sometimes other author friends will put out the call, hey, I'm going to Barnes & Noble in December. Does anybody want to sign with me? Or there's this new event somewhere, and would you be interested? So finding your tribe and finding a group of writers that are like you or close to your genre, it's really helpful to be able to share ideas, share experiences. A lot of times we carpool to these events.
So yeah. Very nice. Now, when your books came out, did you contact the libraries yourself, or did Sisters in Crime do that, or like to have your book available for people to check out from the library?
Right. I talked to a lot of the librarian contacts that I had.
Okay.
And most of them sent me to the person that purchases. And then a lot of the libraries have it on their website where you can request for mm-hmm. them to add a book to the collection.
Mm-hmm. Is that a long process?
No, it was a couple weekends of which ones would I like to send information to and let them know that there's a new book out.
Okay.
And it's kind of like in your marketing plan, when you go to do your press releases, when you want to send it out to the press of your new book and your launch, same type of thing. So whenever you pick your date for your book to go live, experts say anywhere from 30 to 60 days beforehand, you start planning your calendar of events and what I'm going to send out, and am I going to do contests and blog tours and things like that.
And what was involved with putting that together?
It's a lot of work. I didn't realize when I was a teenager when I decided I want to be a writer, I thought, oh, you write books and get checks. That's what you do. And sign books. And you sign books and write books. And I didn't realize when the book contract for the first one came that it was, oh, well, you need to have a Pinterest account. And you need to be on Google Plus and LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook and all these social media platforms.
How did you hook up with your publisher? Did you have an agent?
No. I was with Sisters in Crime, and we put out an anthology, and mm-hmm. then we put out the second anthology, which was traditionally published by a publisher in Virginia Beach. Mm-hmm. And then I contacted him, and he published my first book.
Oh, great.
And so I went with a small publisher, and then this last book is, I published that myself. So I wanted to see what it was like on the indie side.
And how was it?
It's different. It's not, I've heard different things over the years because, you know, self-publishing had a kind of a bad reputation in the 80s. It was vanity press and, you know, if you really want to do it, you have to go through. But the industry has changed so much with Amazon and with all of the online. Most of the authors that I know now are hybrids. They've got some books that are traditionally published, some that are indie, and then there's some kind of hybrid in there with small publishers.
Okay.
But I don't think there's that many people that are just one type or the other. A lot of folks will get their old catalogs back and republish them or reissue them. And so there's a lot of opportunity these days. If people are interested in being a writer, there's lots of different opportunities.
I wanted to switch to your website, which I think looks great.
Oh, thank you.
How did that come about? Did you build it yourself? Did you have someone help you?
I did. I built it myself. I've been in IT for 18 years, mm-hmm. and I do quality assurance and testing and governance kinds of things. So I bought, I paid for Squarespace. We've used Wix and Squarespace and WordPress, and there's mm-hmm. some others out there that have templates mm-hmm. that you can choose from. And that helps you kind of decide how you want it to look, and they have samples. And then you can build it according to what you need. And I think it's important that you have a blog. If you are going to do a website, you need to have a blog there so that people can keep up with you in your events and your publications and things you're interested in.
And what is it currently hosted on now? Is that Wix? Or
that one is Squarespace. I have another one called Pens, Paws, and Claws. We're 10 different authors who write about animals in our books. And that one's on WordPress.
Oh, okay. Oh, very neat. So you got two.
Mm-hmm. I do.
How often do you update it?
The blog, my personal blog, I blog once a week. Pens, Paws, and Claws, we do blog once a week, but it's 10 different people, so the rotation is every 10 weeks.
Okay.
And then we have guest authors who write about pets or have pets, and they come in as a guest interview. So we do that. So that one posts twice a week. My personal one is once a week. And then I update it as events come current, or if there are new pictures or new books. I like mm-hmm. to make sure it's always current.
And how do you like Squarespace? I've only dabbled in it. I've not ever used it, really.
I do. I like them all. I like Squarespace. I like Wix. I like WordPress. They all have their different little nuances, but mm-hmm. it's basically the same. You can set up like carts if you want to sell your books. Mm-hmm. You can set up photo albums. Never done a podcast. I'm sure that you can do that. So I think that is cool. So I'm really interested in what you're doing here.
Oh, well, thank you. And I noticed on your website, it looks like you have your own personal logo.
I do. I had someone create that for me.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Was it your mm-hmm. own or did someone?
No, somebody did it.
It looks
for me.
Great.
Thank you.
And how do you use it for your branding?
I try to use it. I went to a conference one time and they said, oh, you should sign all of your blog posts so that they know who wrote it. And I said, well, okay. But it looked funny with a digitized signature. Mm-hmm. So I said, let me go with some kind of logo. And I try to use that on all the blog posts and then on the different social media sites and the website.
Do you have business cards?
I do.
And is it on there too?
It is.
Oh, great. Did you have a branding or marketing strategy from the get-go, or is it something that just organically grew over time? And what have you found that works well and what hasn't worked well?
It organically grew over time. I mean, there's so many things, and if you're on these forums on Facebook and Yahoo and Google, all these different writers, oh, you have to do this, and you have to do Goodreads, and you have to do Facebook. Well, all of these platforms are evolving as time goes on. So Goodreads, you used to be able to do giveaways, and that would increase the number of people that had access or saw your book by putting it on their book lists. Now they're changing that in January. They're going to go to a paid model, so that's going to be different. Facebook has changed its algorithms on the author and fan pages, so you don't get a lot of traffic unless you're boosting your articles. So you learn as you go, and things that worked one time may not work the second time.
Cool.
And there's so much that you need to keep up with. I mean, you need a newsletter, so that means you need to collect email addresses when you meet people or when you do contests, and you need to do Facebook hops and Twitter parties and things like that to get your name out there. So there's just so much. And I think you need to try as an author, find out what works for you, what sells books for your genre. Mm-hmm. If you go to something and it doesn't necessarily, I try not to use the selling books as my criteria of, oh, I'll never go back and do that event again, because sometimes I've sold one or two books, but I picked up a you know, a contact that led to an interview or led to a blog post or led to some other organization where there was training or information. So you kind of have to balance it, but you can't do everything. And I do about 50 or 60 events a year, and I'm trying to cut back to the ones that are local, the ones that support the libraries. I do some events for schools, and you don't sell books there, but actually I did have one of the students brought the book in and asked for it to be signed, so that was nice. But I like to give back and to encourage young authors. I mean, I think there's an opportunity there. And we always had writers and poets in residence at our school, so it was nice to, oh wow, there really is a writer, and they are real people.
And how do you balance it? Because that seems a lot. In addition to actually writing, in addition to actually having a full-time job.
It is. I tend to compartmentalize of, okay, this is my free time for this, and this is my free time for that. And I try to organize it along those lines. And at first, the first book and when the first stories came out, it was, oh, do everything, because you don't really know what works.
Mm-hmm.
So you start tracking things and you start paying attention to, okay, did that increase my social media presence at all, or did I sell books from this? Maybe I don't need to do as much of this since it's taking up so much time. Maybe I do something else. And that's when the networking with other authors helps, because they can kind of say, hey, I tried this, sold lots and lots of books, or, you know, I sat in a field in the rain for 2 days and nobody came by. It does help to have other people and to bounce off ideas.
And I think you mentioned somewhere, maybe I saw it on your website, but that treating your writing as a business, how do you do that yourself?
It is. You have to, well, one, you need to always be professional, because if somebody says, I want to interview you, or I want you to come and speak to my event, you need to be there, you need to be on time, you need to be present, be prepared. There, a lot of times we'll have new writers that will come, you know, and they show up in shorts, and it's like, wait a minute, you were supposed to be here to present, and this is your brand, and you're talking about yourself. So that does help with Sisters in Crime and groups like James River Writers, because they coach members and they give them ideas. I went to a great presentation last year at James River Writers about public speaking and how you should handle a microphone and what you should do if you're on television.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Nobody coached me on that, so that was beautiful. That it was good to know that there's tips and tricks that you can do. And so, I mean, it really does need to be treated as a business. It's going to cost you money if you're going to be a, even if you have a publisher, you still are responsible for a lot of marketing. You're responsible for your website. You can either do it yourself, if you have the time and the energy and the skills, or you may need to hire folks. And if you find a good team, that works too.
Okay. Because
you do get to a point where you can't do everything.
Sure. Oh, no. And you mentioned, first I want to go back to your website. I like that you had a playlist for your book.
Oh, yeah.
Where did that idea come from? What inspired, was it music that inspired you as you were writing it, or is it something you thought of after the fact?
Both. Music is so important. It is always on, whether I'm at home or I'm at work or in the car. And I like all kinds of genres, so there's whatever mood I'm in at the moment. When I'm writing, it tends to be faster, louder, heavier, rock and roll kind of things. And when I'm editing, it tends to be quieter, jazz or classic. But I try to think of songs that fit the story and my character. She drives a Mustang, so there's some songs about Mustangs. Hall & Oates, Private Eyes. I mean, there's just some that fit her character.
They're watching you.
And I'm an
80s
girl. I'm sorry?
They're watching you.
Exactly. And I'm an 80s girl, so even though I listen to modern music and older music, I tend to gravitate back to the 80s.
Oh, yeah, we're in sync there.
Yeah.
Oh, great. I thought it was a clever idea. Would you put something like that in your book, or maybe you have already, because I hadn't read the newest one.
I didn't actually put a playlist, but there's always music involved. Mm-hmm. In the first one, The Secret Lives and Private Eyes, an author hires her to find out if a rock singer from the 80s who died in a fiery car crash really died.
Mm-hmm.
The rumor is that he faked his death and he's living incognito in Amelia County.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a whole lot of 80s music in that one. And then this one, the second one, The Tulip Shirt Murders, a music producer hires her to see who's bootlegging his CDs.
Uh-huh.
And so I love music, and it'll appear. Same with dogs. I love dogs, too, so they're always in my stories.
And you said Margaret was a pit bull, right?
English bulldog. Oh,
English bulldog, uh-huh. Excuse me.
Yeah. She's a log with legs. She's a lot of comfort. Not much security, and she likes to nap and eat.
And also on your website, you have the press kit. Is mm-hmm. that something you wrote yourself, or did you have help with that? Because I would find it hard to write about myself.
It is, and it feels weird. It feels weird when you start writing in third person about mm-hmm. yourself, but mm-hmm. you need to have a biography, and you need to have one that's shorter and longer, because sometimes they ask you for 20 words, 30 words, and then sometimes they want a whole, give me your CV or your resume. How long have you been writing? What are all your credits? We had someone come in to Sisters in Crime and talk about what authors need to have. And there were some examples, and it's like, you need to have your current pictures out there. Don't be like some of the authors who have one picture from 20 years ago. Because you want to be recognizable when you meet people.
Well, that does help.
It does, it does. And, you know, biography, your list of books. And a lot of times that helps if you sign up with a bookseller. They can just go to your website and see your current catalog.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to send in a whole list of, these are the books that I'd like to sign.
With your biography, do you have any tips on how you did it yourself? Were there questions you asked yourself and then put it in a narrative, or I mean, how did you go about writing about yourself, and how do you know how long is enough?
I started out with about 300 words, and then I pared it down to a shorter one, and mm-hmm. then I think there's a longer one out there too, that's three or four paragraphs, and they're all variations of the same kind of my history, what have I done.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to have some information about me that was personal.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to go into too much detail, like a resume, like from 1984 to 1986, I did this, you know. Mm-hmm. So you needed to take it up a level and find something interesting about, if you write about dogs, I would put something dog related. Or if there was, you write science fiction or fantasy, I would make sure that it kind of relates to that. Or your interest in fantasy and fiction started at a young age. And
oh, okay.
All that right. kind of.
Well,
and I'm also in an online group called Guppies, which are called The Great Unpublished. And even though we're published now, but the Guppies tend to stay together. They have offshoot groups, and they're very helpful with marketing.
Oh, very nice.
If you send them your biography, or you send them a synopsis or a query letter, they'll critique it for you and send it back, which is great, because a lot of times you think it's perfect, or I think it's perfect when it's written, and then it's like, well, this could be improved, or move this paragraph, or this would make it stronger.
Well, that's great. Is this like a bulletin board style, or is this a Facebook group, or?
It's through Yahoo groups.
Oh, Yahoo groups.
And,
okay.
And it's an offshoot of Sisters in Crime. It's their internet chapter.
Okay.
And so it's nice to interact with folks all over the country.
Oh, sure.
And they're in different phases of their publishing. Some are short stories, some are novelists. Some have been publishing for years. Some have just put out one or two things.
Oh, very nice. And you also mentioned on your site, I believe it was your site, mentioning leaving reviews of authors' books and how important that is. I don't know if readers understand how important that is. And could you talk about that a little bit?
It is. It's all part of the marketing plan and the mm-hmm. algorithms. Sites like Goodreads and Amazon, they will do marketing for you if you hit so many reviews. And there are different algorithms. People say it's in the 25, 50 range. And certain things happen when you get more reviews past that. So I try to always, if I read somebody's book, I try to always go out there and leave a review. And it doesn't have to be something you would write in ninth grade English. It could be one or two sentences. I like the book. I like the characters. This was really interesting. There were a lot of twists in it. And then you rate it according to the stars. And everybody loves 4 and 5 stars. But, you know, if you didn't like it, that's fine, too. I mean, sometimes you learn as much from reviews that aren't as glowing as some of the other ones. Well, maybe that thing didn't work in that chapter. Or maybe somebody didn't get that kind of character. So it's good to have that feedback.
Yes, I appreciate constructive criticism. I try to take that, not personally, but as something to learn from.
Exactly, and that's the way you have to take it. And again, that falls under the whole professionalism and mm-hmm. that this is a business. You shouldn't take it personally. I mean,
well, it sounds like you have a great attitude about it, so that's
cool. Oh, well, thank you. Years of experience.
Sure, sure. Well, thank you about that. Yeah, I was wondering, mm-hmm. have you ever requested someone to review your book?
I have. Sometimes with these, when you do blog tours, mm-hmm. some of the people want you to do an interview or a guest post, and then others will do a review. So they'll ask you for an ARC, which is an advanced review copy, mm-hmm. so that they can actually do the review on the book. Sometimes it just depends. Now, when I'm putting the book together, I do ask author friends for a quote for the book.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so they'll read an early copy. It may not be the final version, but it's usually an early copy.
Okay. Yeah, that's very helpful, too. I guess you would call that a testimonial or is that a blurb right. or something
uh-huh.
like that?
Blurb, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how do you best communicate with your readers? Is there a platform or is it just one-on-one at conferences and events?
I think it goes back to the marketing. It's like everything. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're answering email if somebody drops you a line on your website or your email. Sometimes you're speaking to 200 or 300 people at a conference. Sometimes you're speaking to a small group of 5 or 6, or it might be a high school class. So you kind of need to tailor it according to what they're interested in. Are they interested in how did you get published? How did you find a publisher? What is your writing style? A lot of them want to know about book marketing if they're actually published or they've started a book.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got all of your online platforms. I mean, I do a lot on Pinterest and LinkedIn, but I don't do a lot of interaction. Most of that is with Facebook and Twitter. Once in a while, Google Plus. Instagram, there's some interaction, but that's usually just with photos and videos. A lot of conversation on Facebook and on Twitter.
Well, that's good. With Pinterest, what are you doing there?
I build boards for everything that I'm interested in. So that could be shoes or books or dogs or holidays, projects. And then I've started building one for each short story or story because as I'm writing it, I pull in pictures of what I think my characters look like. And I try to show pictures of what Richmond looks like and the places that she visits. Now, I do use a lot of real places, but if there's a murder or something gruesome that happens, I make it up because I don't want anybody to right. think that would happen at that site.
Right, sure. I always wondered about, having pictures of your characters. Because, you know, as a reader, sometimes you want it to be in your own imagination what they look like. And you might be disappointed about if the author has some kind of official this is what the character looks like. Was that ever a concern with you, or you just said they like it or they don't like it?
It's funny because I described her minimally. I mean, you know she's in her 30s, and she has blue eyes and red hair, and she drives a black Mustang, and she's about 5'5", 5'6", and active, and she eats a lot of junk food. But I never really described spent a lot of detail describing her, because I like to do that. When I'm reading a book, I like to read it and picture what I think the person is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have it in my mind, and then I try to find models. But both cover designers, when they started, the publisher when he started working, and then when I hired a designer for the second book, well, what does she look like? Where does she live? And what kind of car does she have? And what kind of dog does it look? So I sent them to my Pinterest page, so they got kind of an idea of Richmond looked. So it helped that way. But I still like, when I'm reading something, I kind of want to visualize it how I picture it.
You bring up the cover. You want to talk a little bit about that, putting that together, how that came about for your second book, I suppose, right? You didn't have as much of a hand in the first one, I guess.
Right. When you go traditional, the publisher has the final say over your title and your cover. He was very generous and sent me five copies, five different designs. I picked two, and then he kind of ran a contest on his website of people voted for which one they liked, and it was the one I liked, so yay. But...
stuff the ballot there, did you?
No. Because I kind of wanted to see what people were saying, which cover they liked better. I wanted to portray that it was Richmond. Uh-huh. And it's a softer mystery. It's not gruesome. It's not gross. So I wanted brighter colors. And there are things that happen that are crime and they're bad. But like a cozy, it kind of happens off scene. You don't see the blood and the gore. And I hired a professional artist for the second book, and she did the same kind of thing. She asked me a whole lot of questions, and she wanted to see what Richmond was like because she doesn't live here.
Mm-hmm.
And she used part of, I think it's the Lee Bridge.
Okay.
It's the walking part when you're coming off of that. So on the bigger covers, you can actually see the street signs with the street names. It's muted, I think, on the smaller images.
And she also gives you some design ideas before you pick one, and then you go from there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting because I always have in my head what it looks like,
mm-hmm.
and then when the artist comes back with their rendition of it, it's like, wow, that's different. I never thought of it that way. But I like both of the covers. They both did a really good job.
Oh, they're very nice. How long did the whole cover process take?
Probably a month, maybe.
Okay.
4 to 6 weeks. It took a lot of time because you have to write the bio and somebody has to review it and edit it,
mm-hmm.
and then make sure you have your author headshot. And then is there going to be a synopsis or quotes on the cover? So you kind of have to decide.
And I didn't think of it until now, but is there something that's consistent across both books, and I guess the third book, if there's a third book, that kind of ties them all together as a series? Is there some kind of artistic element that goes through it?
I think it's the kind of the city, the area, mm-hmm. as its mm-hmm. own, as a character, because Richmond and Central Virginia play such a role in the book. So I think that's what kind of ties all three together.
Okay.
Plus the characters are returning in each one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You have the same core characters. And Chaz, he was the strip club owner in the first book, and I was just going to end it there and move on to the second book with a different set of characters coming into her life with investigations. But my critique group really, really liked him. They kept talking. And I said, but he's gross and he's doing vile things. But he grew it because he would cat sit for his elderly neighbor. I mean, he was always doing something that was a surprise, even though he was kind of sleazy. Well, he was, the first book, the mayor died outside of his strip club, and she spent most of her summer trying to clear his name. Well, in the second book, he decides that he's going to run for mayor. So in the third book, Chaz is going to run for mayor.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Not sure Richmond's ready for him.
Right.
I hate to think what the freebies it would be for.
I know. He's going to run his campaign out of his strip club.
Right. Try it.
Anyway.
I want to finish up with on social media. Where do you find the most engagement with your readers, and what do you feel turns a sale more, like
Twitter versus Facebook or some other platform?
It's hard to tell sometimes. I think I sell more books if I'm at a conference or a presentation where I actually talk to readers.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to do better that way. I know Twitter plays into it, and I know Facebook does, but there's no real easy way to say, oh, all those 4 hours or 10 hours that you were on Facebook led to a certain number of sales. I mean, sometimes you'll see a spike, and you can kind of say, oh, well, I boosted an ad, or I did a Twitter campaign, and you can tie it to that. But then other times, people will share things randomly, which is really cool, and which is really nice and very helpful. And so some things take on a life of their own and they spread, and there's a lot of comments and a lot of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I can write something that I think is brilliant and post it and I get no feedback. I put one dog picture out there and it goes viral. So you kind of have to know that there's some posts that are just fun and, hey, happy holidays or happy Halloween, and others are, I try not to do a saturation of buy my book. I try to have a lot of information. I try to share other authors' things, mm-hmm. especially when they have a celebration. I want to make sure that everybody knows, hey, so-and-so has a new book, or so-and-so just became a New York Times bestselling author. You know, it's really cool when you can see people succeed.
Yes. I enjoy what I enjoy about James River Writers is just, you know, you meet all these fantastic writers who are as interested in the craft as you are and want to support you as much as you support them. I think it's great. You know, it's not like a competition.
No. And Richmond has such a talented pool of authors, all genres. And the fact that they pull together, because like Sisters in Crime is a pretty small chapter. We partner a lot with the Virginia Romance Writers. And we've shared speakers and events that way. And James River Writers, we participated last year in the pub crawl, the literary pub crawl.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot of fun that we were able to work with. And then at different events, we see a lot of the same authors they visit, and we see them at library events and festivals. So it's a small town, but Richmond's very talented and it's very culturally aware. And I mean, it's a wonderful place to be a writer.
I agree. So how will people find you?
Website, I'm at heatherwidener.com, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, LinkedIn, yeah. Google+.
MySpace?
No, I haven't done that one. That kind of dates us, doesn't it?
Yeah, just a bit.
I've never had a MySpace account.
Well, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. I appreciate it. This was so much fun. And thank you for letting me talk to your readers and listeners.
Oh, you're welcome. And good luck with your new book.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.